do you think that the rat running through a maze analogy is a really important one? That if there's just a, I think, you know, agency, I come back to a word which I think is really important. You know, I think if what you are doing is fulfilling a series of small tasks, small blocks in an otherwise linear format, for me, that is a kind, I guess you can articulate that as a kind of interactive theatre, but it is a kind of interactive theatre where the bristles of two different kinds of forms seem to grind against each other slightly unsatisfactorily, that it's still a linear piece of theatre where the kind of control of authorship and storytelling is still being exercised to a very high degree, but you're also simultaneously being asked to participate and engage. And it feels a bit like that offer is kind of, to me at least, kind of half-hearted in a way, that you're sort of saying, do some stuff, but only stuff in exactly the way I want you to do it at the time that I want you to do it at. And I think it's about acknowledging our status as authors and status as agents of people's interaction, and acknowledging that actually asking anyone to step out of any kind of traditional framework is you know, is a really big thing. Something that is one of the core pieces of Hide and Seek's work, which relates, I think, to this, is the difference observed in kind of all the stuff that I've made between asking someone to do something and telling somebody that this game works this way, and if they do something a bit like this, then they'll win. That actually, by inside, sort of appealing to that kind of innate sense of play in people and tagging the kind of objective rather than the action, it's that, go on, pretend to be a dustman. Oh, I don't know how to do that. But you know, or but you're a dustman, and all it's a big dustman compliment. This is a crap idea, but big dustman contest,
dustman.
And the best, most enthusiastic dustman is going to carry home the bin of joy. And yeah, it's brilliant. All recorded for posterity. You heard it here first. Yeah, 3, 2, 1. You know, then people will go for it in a different way, and they will kind of engage their enterprise and their creativity, and a kind of lot of things which are incredibly native to people. But there's something about the kind of, yeah, that I'm not sitting down in a theatre, I'm doing a thing, feels a lot harder and kind of more alienating than I'm in a completely different environment where I'm playing or making or chatting, and then a thing emerges out of that. I think there's something, it's just, again, it's the sort of the frames and the kind of expectations that we bring into this kind of stuff is really important to consider at a formal level.
I think it's interesting in terms of this rat in a maze analogy as well, in terms of I don't necessarily agree in that that all of our audiences act like sheep and do everything that we say. And I think the more that audiences do interactive theatre and do interactive pieces, the more they start to challenge that. And that's something that we've kind of called between ourselves as opportunities for devilment, and like finding that if you can find a flaw in it as an audience, sometimes those audience members really go for it. And I kind of wondered, Lynn, as a critic, where there's an interactive piece and it relies on your involvement, how do you then critic that in terms of if you don't necessarily want to be a part of it? Or do you feel that you have to be a sheep in order to critic an interactive piece well? Or
I think it depends. I mean, I think that how you experience a theatre piece as a critic, I think it's no different from how anybody actually experiences, you know, I don't go in and go, oh, critical hat on now, you know, I am going to view this in an entirely different way. But I think that, you know, certainly it has been the case that I've refused to do things in terms of, you know, of being a member of the audience, and it would certainly be the case that, on the whole, though, I would feel that it's probably not my place as a member of that audience to really, you know, kind of make a particular stand. So, for example, a very good example here would be something maybe quite a lot of people have seen, the show Audience down at St. George's West. Yeah. Now, had, you know, like a lot of people, I had extremely strong reaction to that show. But, you know, I didn't think it was probably quite the appropriate thing for me to rush onto the stage. Maybe actually if everybody else had as well, maybe I would have followed like a sheep, who knows. But I don't think it's fundamentally sort of difference. I'd just like to pick up actually on something though that you said, Alex. You see, I'm not sure. You talk about the kind of the tension, the bristling between the idea of agency of the audience and of playfulness and the demands maybe of theatre, of storytelling, linear structure and things like that. But actually, in a way, I think one of the things that's very interesting about, you know, a lot of interactive theatre is about the possibilities of actually using those things together, and that actually the tension is a good thing, not actually a bad thing. I mean, I'm thinking of something like a show like Coney's Small Town Anywhere, in which there were absolutely no actors, only a playing audience. And where the outcome of what happened every single night absolutely was determined within a framework by the audience.
I mean, yeah. I think it's a really good example because actually yeah. I think, if you want to, so I think that I, in my more highfalutin moments called participatory dramaturgy, you know, like something that does still have that architectural function of a good communicated event, but also has agency for it. I mean, I'm not sure that anybody has solved it as effectively as Coney did in that particular piece, where there was, you know, like I had an absolutely extraordinary time. I can't even begin to describe what happened to me when I played it again, but it was genuinely like I found something out about myself that night in a kind of really quite remarkable way. And yeah, you completely are driving your own journey through that. I do think. Your point, though, that people get better at playing it, people get better at participating, is an important point. That one of my experiences about Coney's, that piece, was that I felt very lucky that I'd gone on a night with very accomplished players and participants. That they were, you know, like I'd heard other people talk very disappointedly and scathingly about it, and nothing really happened. Like, well, if nothing really happened, then you didn't make anything happen, and you weren't, you know, it was all there, everything was there, crackling, waiting for you to kind of embrace it, and maybe it is on you in that environment to go for it. So yeah, I think that I'm not completely ruling out at all the possibility of solving the questions of participation within kind of linear bounded formats. I just think it's important that we also include other possibilities in the kind of matrix of what counts as interactive events.
And one of the things that's interesting is that as people who come from a theatre background have a tremendous set of skills around the live deployment and response to what happens. You know, it's the most basic thing when you start acting in school plays or someone forgets a line. And three of you are stood on stage and someone has to decide what the hell you do and someone gets you out of the hole. And that, I don't think it's coincidental that theatre practitioners and artists more broadly have contributed massively to a sense of understanding of interaction and participation as cultural activities. You know, that there tends to be seen as this sort of huge parallel sort of difference between live performance and digital culture. But we worked for a while around virtual reality in the late 1990s, and I came across over and over again people who'd come from a theatre background who were now researchers in VR and things like that, because they had a tremendous set of skills that they could bring to something that unfolds in real time. So, you know, it's important to accentuate the ways in which theatre brings very particular sets of understandings, very particular kind of grammars and strategies to interaction, and I think, you know, we should celebrate that.
But I also think that actually what Alex is saying is kind of quite interesting in the context of, because it does raise the spectre, what you're saying, that effectively that we as an audience can be a failure, you know, that kind of rather Oscar Wilde idea, the play was a great success, but the audience were, you know, were rubbish, you know, were a total failure. And it does raise that idea that if you can get better at playing, if you can get better at participating in this kind of theatre, you can also, on the other hand, actually be a disaster as an audience. And I suppose what interests me there is that if we're going to talk about the age of the audience or the agency of the audience, which I agree I think is a kind of better thing to talk about, is about the fact that effectively, as an audience, and I am using, but we need to have feel that if it's genuinely interactive, that we have some equality. And I think that there is still this sense that artists are making work for an audience, at least in the theatre world, rather than the idea that about genuinely making the work with the audience.
Yeah, and for me, it's all down to being offered a choice that's meaningful.
Yeah.
You know, that's the simple question is, I'm not interested in a choice per se, I'm only interested in a choice that feels meaningful to me. And that can be a very minute thing. In a physics-based game online, you can have a meaningful choice as to go to left and right, or you can have a meaningful choice where you sit down and have a live interaction with a performer for half an hour about the, you know, the most intimate things in your life. And you know, it's a scalable set of options.
But if you offer that meaningful choice to an audience and then they decide not to take it, as participatory performance makers, does the whole thing break down then, or do you have to allow for that failure to happen? I mean, I wonder, Mark, with your piece, what?
No, I think one thing, because the last piece that I experienced with Alex's, I failed in that particular task. I didn't get very far in my rat maze. I didn't get through into the second room. I didn't get through to the end of the game. So I'm kind of like, well, if I bought a ticket to this, how would I feel? Because there's an awful lot of people who actually get through to the next room or the room beyond that. And I had to go home. And I actually had someone shadowing me as well, who was a kind of invisible person, who I was like, how can I not ask you a question? It's like having, it's like, you know, I don't know what to do next. And there's a person in the room, what do I do? But my worry, obviously, is just that. It's like, well, okay, so this is a show that is repeated, it's for a one-on-one show. What happens if you can't complete? What do you go home feeling? I mean, if you wanted to critique that, it's kind of like, well, I've got no idea what the next room looked like. It's hearsay. So from an audience perspective, I don't know how you'd feel if all of a sudden we just said, like, thank you very much, goodbye, we're going to stop now, we're not going to finish. But I think that's a challenge too. It's kind of like, well, how rewarding is it as a non-complete performance?
I mean, Harriet, as a programmer, I mean, do you look at that kind of work and kind of, I mean, on the one hand, there's that idea of failure, but then with that failure becomes the risk as the audience that, yes, some of you are going to get to the next part, and that is kind of really exciting. And kind of, how do you view that as a programmer?
I mean, I guess the presumption there would be that it's a work with that kind of video game-like structure where you go from level to level. I think the kind of interactive work that I'm more interested in is work, I guess, that is questioning the politics of power, and I think that's maybe as more interesting or more important or as important as this question of vulnerability and different kinds of interactive systems are already hardwired, I guess, to lean one way or another in terms of what they can allow an audience to do. So a work that, through its structure, is based on a series of binary choices is immediately less empowering in one regard than, say, something like A Small Town Anywhere, where a situation has been set up and it's very much for those audience or participants to then negotiate between themselves how they want to interact. But that's not to say that we should apply a kind of utopian rhetoric around one kind of structure over another. I just think it's very much about the effect that particular situation sets up, and the neon at the back of the room, Start a Revolution, might be more empowering than a very multiple choice driven game. Or you could take a classical artwork, which in its presence, its scale, it might inspire you to do something or to act far more than being within the kind of rat maze that Alex talked about. So as a programmer, programme, I'm constantly looking at what I think the structure of that kind of work is doing and where it takes the audience and how it empowers them or disempowers them. And if it does disempower them, why is that interesting in that particular work?
I mean, Alex, Matt, John, do you ever worry about letting your audiences down?
Of course.
Yeah, every minute of every day.
Yeah, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think absolutely. I think
that's how you learn as a maker of this kind of work. It's seeing, you know, there is no better education than seeing bafflement or anxiety or the disappointment of somebody who isn't overcoming the task you thought was simple but turns out not to be.
Or the other way
around,
I think, like, one of the most confusing or scary criticisms is I wanted you to push me further, and you just go, oh, no, like, I don't know how to do that, because I can't, like, there's more than one person there, and there's one person who just comes out feeling, I wanted you to push me further, and, like, you can, like, you see people's minds kind of blow if you're like, I didn't stop you from doing anything you wanted to do, and I didn't make you do anything. And I say I didn't make it's not me or but you know what I mean. It's that sense of you know, before you came into this room, you had all the choice that you wanted because you were just sort of going about your life. And then when you came in here, it was a sort of an agreement to take away a few of those choices. And I think the confusion that to give someone a choice is to empower them is not the same thing because you know, and you can't treat it like that. You can't kind of go, ta-da, I've given you a choice. You know, that's better than not giving you a choice, because I think that you haven't given them a choice from everything. You've given them one of the choices
that
you've
you
put
designed.
In place.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah,
it's like...
And so you are responsible for your audience in that way. I think, you know, that thing of like, oh, well, the audience failed. I don't actually think you can quite get out of that. I mean, there are perhaps some extreme pieces of performance art where you could say that maybe Chris Burden shooting himself in the, you know, getting someone to shoot him and stuff like that, you know, you could say there are some in that wing, but generally you're responsible for framing the structure in which it takes place, and you're therefore responsible for all of those options, which includes people resisting or refusing at every single point. And I'm not a participatory person in other people's work at all. I tend to be quite the miserable, you know, resistor. Yeah, last night I saw a show here, and the screen comes up, and it says, the performer says, say what's on the screen, and the first line is, I am an individual. And I'm like, if you think I'm fucking reading out, I'm an individual, along with everyone else in this room, you're joking. You know, and that was the last bit of participation I did in that piece of work, you know, because I'm like, that does not compute. But I do think as a maker, you're responsible for framing that structure and in such a way that it's interesting or meaningful. And that's where, you know, work like the audience, you know, seem to, I haven't seen it, but that seems to where it has its agency, is that even if you refuse or have a total detestation of what's going on, it puts you in a position of having to confront something or engage with something.
I think that thing about actually taking care of your audience is something that I think is so important. And I think, you know, often I don't agree with the idea that either interactive theatre is either the zeitgeist or the future or the past, because I think it's all those things. I think it will be with us for a very long time to come. But I think what you have just at the moment, to be slightly contentious, is rather as what happened with verbatim theatre just a few years ago, where you suddenly had lots of companies who looked around, saw the success of some verbatim theatre, and started kind of piling in to do verbatim theatre, which kind of, I recall, led to one sitting once having in a conversation with some other people, where a couple of young theatre makers were saying, well, maybe we could just actually record the people and didn't know that we were recording them and then use their stuff and kind of, you know, whether or not that would be ethically acceptable. Well, in fact, they thought it would be perfectly ethically acceptable. And I think there's something rather similar actually going on with quite a lot of, you know, the work, the interactive work that's being made, which is that I think people are piling in without really thinking through what their responsibilities are as theatre makers.
Can I ask you a question, Lynn?
Yeah.
I, I mean, one of the things, I mean, you must probably have seen more of this work than any human being alive.
not as much as the robot has seen, you know?
Yeah, and one of the things that in my, you know, that I, it does occur to me sometimes is that you could argue that this is the kind of the sign of the sort of the collapse of theatre, because it's about a reduction down to tiny numbers of people and providing, you know, having to reduce everything to such a level that you can give a small number of people a very rich experience, because, you know, that actually suits most fringe shows. In Edinburgh, ideal. And a one-person show for a one audience at a time, that's just about, you know, the ticket sales you're going to want to work with. do you see, you know, do you feel that there's any truth in that there's some sense of it being a kind of retreat?
No, not at all, actually. I think one of the things that we need to absolutely remember is that, you know, after all, it's only kind of 400 years since theatre moved inside. Haroon kind of, Haroon, referred to it earlier about the fact that, you know, if you go back to the Mummers plays or to theatre, you know, there was a very strong element of interactivity. You know, it's quite clear that when you look at some of the length of time, for example, that it took John Shakespeare's time to perform one of the plays, that a lot more was clearly going on than simply saying the script, because even if they, you know, raced through the script, that was only going to last, you know, 2.5 or 3 hours, and yet the performances went on for 3.5 or 4 hours. So I think that actually all that we are seeing now is something in a strange way that we have rather lost in theatre in the last really probably largely 150 years or 200 years.
Which parallels a time in, you know, other kinds of culture where we have been more of a receiver, where broadcasting was
industrialization.
This kind of dominant form, and, you know, something... one of my colleagues at Hide and Seek, Holly, said is, you know, that the lack of large-scale street-based playfulness in the 20th century is actually the kind of anomaly. That actually we've always had a kind of history of, you know, public performance and participation and interaction, and actually it was just at a time when television and other forces kind of maybe kind of locked us a bit more into living rooms and sort of segregated us a bit, that we didn't think of that as part of the kind of normal tool set of theatre.
And I'd just to add to that, I mean, one of the things that I think is the case is that, you know, certainly if you live in London and you go to the theatre a lot, that like I do on the Fringe or to somewhere like the Royal Court upstairs, you know, there are evenings where I would pop in there, and I'm not talking about press night, where actually I can look around and I recognise every single person in the audience. Yeah, it's one of the reasons I love regional theatre, because it feels to me that it often, you know, has a real audience of real theatre goers who are paying real money, you know, so there is a real economy in order to see it. But I also think that, in fact, that though it's not new, because what we are seeing for this particular generation of theatre makers who are experimenting and trying things out, I think it's not surprising that on the whole that they're beginning quite small. And I think there is no reason why, in fact, actually, it might be possible to make this kind of work actually on a really huge scale. And in fact, to a certain extent, I know that Alex is absolutely, you know, experimenting with those ideas.
Well,
maybe bearing that in mind, we'll just ask one more question, and then we'll open it up to you guys in the audience participation area, agents. So bearing that in mind in terms of like intimate and small scale, like Charlotte Higgins just recently wrote a blog, which asked, is intimate theatre decadent? And obviously she's discussed it in a lot more depth. I'm just offering you kind of the glib question, but kind of what would your response be to that? Maybe I'll just ask all of you. I'll go with that.
Yes.
Good. That's what I like to say. Harry, what do you think?
I'd say no, because... rather than getting caught up in it being theatre or any particular art form, it's an encounter between two people, and from that route anything might happen. You could start a revolution, you could change what you're doing, essentially any encounter between two people creates the potential for a trickle-down effect that might have a larger impact on society. So I wouldn't get caught up in the numbers in that particular moment, because you're just taking a snapshot of an incident and not considering what the outcomes of that work might be.
Well, I mean, I think really what I've just said, which is no, absolutely, because I think the possibilities are endless and I think the numbers are potentially endless as well. Let's give a very good example. You know, a show like Adrian Howe's Foot Washing for the Soul, absolutely beautiful show, and it is absolutely about that one-on-one encounter. But I actually know a number of people who, as a result of doing that show, had kind of, in their own personal lives, kind of then set out and to recreate their own kind of performances of that with their friends or in their homes. It's, as you say, absolutely a kind of spreading out, trickle-down effect.
I think at the same time as all of that being completely true and right, that intimate theatre isn't decadent, I do think that it's important that some kind of cohort of people who are interested in this stuff are investigating ways that it can scale and ways that it can evolve. And, you know, I think one of the things that informs where I'm coming from is the kind of relationship between film and theatre, that there is a kind of well understood and well trodden path between film and all of its kind of guises, commercial or art house or kind of purely sort of experimental, and the world of theatre. And there's, you know, lots of useful kind of reciprocal exchanges that happen between those two environments, and part of those are to do with questions of distribution, that, you know, the adaptation of a stage play into a film does fundamentally transform its ability to be seen by a greater number of people. And I think that one of the things that I thought was interesting at the time I was starting Hide and Seek was we had a games industry, it's always the games industry, that is making very, very, very wide spread, millions of people accessible live experiences called video games. But there was no traffic, none, between what was happening there and what was happening in kind of interactive and participatory art. And I feel that as there's a route from straight theatre to film, so there could be a route from participatory theatre to those kinds of things. And I think regardless of, we just need to walk along that path a bit and explore it and see what the kind of way stations are and what value can translate in both directions for both kind of parties.
Yeah, I mean, I would really second that. I think the games industry have kind of recognised, or people within the games industry have recognised that weakness, and there are organisations in the States like IndieK, for example, who have really set out to sort of make an indie scene of games makers and put them in some kind of continuity with people making tens of millions of dollar big blockbuster games and try and make sure that there's some kind of correlation and conversation between the two. The film industry is brilliant at that. You know, people can make films on a shoestring and that film can then end up in your Odeon on rare occasions, but it can happen. And that's
at least possible.
That sense of continuity is really important. I think a game like L.A. Noire is really interesting because, you know, the mechanic of L.A. Noire is to watch someone as you talk to them and tell whether they are lying or not lying to you. Well, I mean, that is, you know, as archetypically theatrical as you could ever imagine, but this is a big blockbuster game. So, you know, there are absolutely all of those interpenetrations, and I think, you know, it's beholden on all of us who work within the sector to be outward-looking and look for the ways in which you draw those connections across those different cultures.